The first draft was comically terrible. It's like it kind of felt like I had like a bunch of Barbie dolls, and I was just like making them like walk through these historical events and things I wanted them to do, and like they were just plastic.
Heyo, book world. Are you ready for a fabulous new episode of Try Reading? Cozy up with a cup of tea and a magnifying glass because today's guest and her debut novel will have you hooked from the very beginning. Please give the warmest welcome to debut author Erin Cotter. How are you doing, Erin?
I am doing great. It's so wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course, I am just so excited to have you on the show. And listeners, if you haven't heard me mention Erin and her fabulous book before, then listen up because this icon is doing iconic things. Erin Cotter writes young adult fiction, originally from Buffalo, New York. She currently calls Austin home. When not writing, she spends time with her partner and pets, eating tacos and searching for golden-cheeked warblers in the Texas Hill Country. Her debut novel, By Any Other Name, published with Simon and Schuster on October 10th, 2023. Erin, I am so delighted to be talking with you today, and I cannot wait to learn more about you and your marvelous book. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Yeah, there's nowhere else I want to be.
Well, that makes me so happy. I do have to ask, what are you currently reading?
Ooh, what am I currently reading? Okay, I just finished a book last night. So this is usually I'm in the middle of something, so this is rare for me. Let's see. I read Erin Akeyvaz's This Is Why They Hate Us. That's the book I finished most recently. And I absolutely loved that one. And I think next I'm going to pick up Curious Tides by Pascal LaSalle.
I've heard of both of those and I've heard good things, about both of those. And so I hope you enjoy Curious Tides.
Yeah, me too. What are you reading right now?
I am currently reading, well, currently listening to The Lost Hero by Rick Riordan.
Oh, nice.
If the listeners listen to any past episodes, they might remember me mentioning I sort of did like, I started my reread of the Percy Jackson series and started with the Heroes of Olympus or Percy Jackson and the Olympians. Now I'm on the Heroes of Olympus. And it's been, gosh, maybe 7 years since I read them. So it was like,
Oh.
I thought I remembered the first book, but it's really like reading it for the first time because everything is new to me, which is kind of exciting because it's all very new. And but now I'm realizing maybe I'm remembering like other books in the series. So either way, it's just so fun. I love Rick's writing, and it's just. And then I'm hoping to go on to the Trials of Apollo, and then The Sun and the Star, and then of course now there's the new Percy Jackson book that just released.
That's awesome. I love rereading stuff.
Yeah. Well, I just have a couple previous guests shout outs or honorable mentions. From previous authors. And the first is on November 7th. There are two podcast guest releases. The first is Once Upon a Tim by Stuart Gibbs, which is book four. It's Once Upon a Tim, The Quest of Danger. And it's book four in the wonderful medieval adventure series for younger readers. And the series is called Once Upon a Tim. And it's just so much fun. And second is Escape from Mr. Limoncello's Library, the graphic novel by Chris Grabenstein. And this book was first out as a novel many, many years ago. And it made me fall in love with reading even more, thanks to Chris's talented writing. So listeners, don't miss out on this new and amazing way to read a fabulous book. And then on November 14th, we have three podcast guest releases. First is Artifacts of an Ex by Jennifer Chen. If you want a fun, comforting coming-of-age romance, then look no further, listeners. And second is The Nanny with the Nice List, the next book in the amazing Nannies of New York series by Kay Sterling. This romance is just in time for the holiday season, and I cannot wait because if you know me, you'll know how much I love this series. And last but not least is I Can't Even by Jen McKinley. It is a collection of Jen's Kindlevella chapters of I Can't Even that were originally released separately, but now they're all put into one amazing book for you all to enjoy. So, if any of those sound interesting, then listeners, you should definitely check them out. And last but not least, one special shout out to Y'all Fest, which is happening on November 10th and 11th, 2023. It's a free full-day event of author panels, book signings, and just fun bookish and reader experiences. The reason I mention this is because many Try Reading guests will be at Y'all Fest this year. So listeners, if you're in the Charleston, South Carolina area, go to Y'all Fest and enjoy yourself. It is so much fun. So those are all the shout outs or anything I had to mention today. But my first question for you, Erin, is what was your beginning to the world of books and reading?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I actually really hated reading until like maybe like fifth or sixth grade. I felt like all the books we had to read in school were like, like kind of chapter books about like kids were like sad things happened to them, and they were all like very contemporary. And I really wanted like magic and fantasy and dragons, but they were like, no, we're gonna read Bridge to Terabithia and like the best friend's gonna die. And I was like, this is such a like I hate reading. Are they all are all the books like this? So I think in like fifth grade, I kind of like discovered like reading in fantasy. And that got me to read. So I was a big fan of like Brian Jacques' like Redwall series, the Animorphs, and Tamora Pierce's Tortall books.
Yeah, I know the Animorphs are like a fan favorite, and even previous authors have mentioned that as like their beginning to reading. And it is, I can say from experience, like especially middle school and elementary school, like reading for school, the books could be very boring.
Very boring.
And so I can see how it sort of discouraged a love for reading and sort of was like, well, if all the stories are kind of like this, or why, and I would totally be agree, like, why wouldn't you be able to read fantasy or something so exciting? Because yeah, those books are so fun, but it's really wonderful that you found that love for reading and were able to find books that you could fully enjoy. Have you always wanted to be a writer, or did that come later in life?
Yeah, that's a good question too. I don't know that I realized like writing was a job that you could do. It was like I was so curious about like some things as a kid, like animals and outside and things that weren't school. But then like in school, I was like, oh, I'm gonna read this like paper thing. Like I don't know that it like fully clicked that like somebody like wrote this, made it up in their head. I think by like high school, I realized, I think like reading the Twilight books, like I was like, oh, like maybe this is something like I could do. But it still didn't feel like I could. Like I kind of didn't have like the confidence. It was like, that's like something like, people who are like have nicer handwriting and like can proofread papers and catch typos, but the thing I can't really do that well. Like that's something for other people, but not for me. I think it was kind of like always a dream, but I didn't let myself like fully go for it until like maybe like 6 years ago.
It's so wonderful that you were able to, and now here you are with your debut novel out in the world. And knowing that it is a historical novel, as well as there's romance and mystery, and but obviously, the main thing is that it takes place in the 1500s. Have you always loved historical fiction, or did you enjoy reading it when you were younger?
Yeah, you know what? I would say yes. I didn't expect my debut to be historical. Like I didn't think this book would sell. So I was like very surprised when it did and had to do some like I don't know, like author identity resetting. I was like, "Oh, I'm a historical writer now. Like that's what I'm doing. That's what I am." I kind of came of age in like the early 2000s and like late 90s-ish. And like the 90s and early 2000s were like this absolute slam dunk golden age for historical fiction. We had like Shakespeare in Love and Titanic win like best picture of the year, I think in like 97 and 98. And then there were just like all of these books, like mostly middle grade, I remember reading about like all of these different time periods. I guess I love those too. They were kind of like American Girl doll books a little bit, like kind of shorter. And then there, gosh, I wish I could remember this series. They had like gold edges and it was mostly about like princesses and like all different time periods. So I ended up reading like a lot of historical, and didn't fully realize the effect that it had on me until like there I was like many years later also writing historical.
Yeah, and you had mentioned something in the beginning saying that, like, when you started, you didn't think that your debut novel was going to be historical. And that sort of led into my next question, which was when you sat down to write a novel, or whether it was your first or whether it was the one that you said, okay, I'd like to try and get this published, was historical fiction the first genre that came to mind?
No, it wasn't. So I would say when I first took writing seriously and was like, I would love to like get something published, I was writing YA contemporary. And I wrote a lot of YA contemporary. I think I had like four projects that were either shelved or I wrote after By Any Other Name was written, because again, I didn't think it would sell. So I was like, I'm going back to contemporary, I'm gonna write something else. So I started there, and I think in part it was because as a teenager, a lot of my the books I wrote like were urban fantasy, and I was like, wow, I bet it's like really hard to write a book where like nothing magical can happen. Like you just have to like be in the characters' heads and their minds all the time. So I kind of like moved into YA contemporary when I got more serious about writing. But I'm pretty happy that's not what I ended up debuting with in the end, even though I thought that's what would happen.
Yeah, which is just kind of shows the different paths you can take and how unexpected stuff can be, especially with books and ideas and stories.
Okay.
And I mean, well, now here you are with your debut novel published. And as I said, By Any Other Name, published on October 10th. And in this book, it is 1593 in Elizabethan London. 16-year-old Will Hughes makes his living on Shakespeare's stage, stuffing his corsets with straw and pretending to be someone he's not. But he's acting a part offstage too, one his very life depends upon. Will is the son of traitors, and he must blend in and not starve in order to return to his family and escape the Queen of England's kingdom for good. But Will's plans are ruined when his mentor, the famous playwright Christopher Marlowe, is murdered under mysterious circumstances. Will discovers that Marlowe was a spy for the Queen and was stalking an assassin rumored to be part of an ancient secret society. When Will intercepts an attempt on the Queen's life, she chooses him as the next spy master and promises plenty of money and a grand estate, a chance to help his family. But guarding the Queen's life means teaming up with the young Lord James Bloomsbury, a man more obnoxious and handsome than he has any right to be, and who harbors a dark secret of his own. Together, the two will have to hunt the elusive assassin, defend the Queen's life, and avoid losing their own lives as their forbidden feelings for each other ignite. I was so beyond fortunate to receive an ARC of this book, and listeners, let me tell you, it is so marvelous. It has just all of the good vibes and all of the amazing aspects to just such a fun and exciting and adventurous story, but also like so intriguing. And it wrote me right in right away. And in the words of the previous guest I recorded with, I was talking about the book with him because I was reading it at the time. And I sort of told him what it was about. And his words were, wow, what a journey. And it truly is such a fun journey, though, reading this book. And so, listeners, if you haven't picked up By Any Other Name, I highly suggest it. And it's just so wonderful. And so, after all of that, I guess my question is, when did you come up with the idea for By Any Other Name? And what was the inspiration?
Yeah, that's a great question. I should stop saying that. They can be it. Anyway, By Any Other Name had, I would say, like a really long, slow journey. Like I thought of it like way back in 2018. So what's that? 5 years? They don't pay me to do the numbers. I think that's 5 years. And It was kind of just like a spark of an idea. Like I was always really like mystified and like deeply curious about the murder of Christopher Marlowe, which is historically accurate and it's in the jacket copies. It's not a spoiler. He's like a real person, a real playwright who really was murdered. And I always kind of wondered like why, like was it really about the bar bill, which is like kind of what the rumor has it? Like, what if there was something else involved? Like, what if there was something sinister going on? Like, what if he was like caught up in spying for Queen Elizabeth I, which was also a popular theory about Marlowe. So it kind of started there, thinking about Marlowe's death. And I mentioned before the movie Shakespeare in Love. I didn't see that until I was like an English major in college, and I just like fell in love with it. I was like, oh wow, like Shakespeare, it can be fun. It was like pop culture at the time. It was like the Emily Henry of like what people read, and everyone went to go see these plays. And a Shakespeare in Love, I don't really want to spoil it. I know it's an old movie, but it's such a good movie. I don't want to take that from someone, but the ending just kind of like, it's a very like realistic, like deeply researched movie, but the ending kind of wrapped up in this like really neat and unpleasant way. It didn't feel realistic. There were no people of color in this world. Like there were no queer people in this world. Like the women in the world, I think, also like got a short stick in it, and it just, I was like, wow, I love this movie and I hate the ending. Like what if I wrote like a depiction of this world that like resonated more with me and what I would want to see, and not this kind of like, and it all worked out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I love that because as we're seeing now, more diversity is being brought into publishing, which is so important. And whether it was in movies or books years ago, that wasn't always the case. And that's inaccurate. I mean,
Right.
I love that you just had that spark of like, okay, well, why don't I write what I wanted to see? And and then that you were able to craft this story and also just add bits and pieces of like, the real murder that actually happened, and then sort of adding in these characters around it that it's really so fun and so well done. And how would, I mean, if you could say, how long did it take you to write the first draft?
Oh man. So this was a book, like I had the spark of the idea and I was not a good enough writer to pull it off. Like it was, the first draft was comically terrible. It's like I had, it kind of felt like I had like a bunch of Barbie dolls and I was just like making them like walk through these historical events and things I wanted them to do, and like they were just plastic. Nothing was there. Like I gave the first draft to my partner and he was like, I really hate Will. And I was like, what? What do you mean you hate Will? And he was like, he doesn't do anything. He's very whiny. He was nicer than that. But yeah, it was just really not a good draft. So this book went through like tons of major revisions. The first draft, I'd say, took like a year. And obviously it's, I'm like proud I got it done and all that. But yeah, when I looked and started to revise it, it was kind of this moment of like, oh no, you mean I have to like make it better now? Like this is so far from what I wanted it to be.
No more Barbie dolls. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, well, I that's very funny, and I love, that you were able to get though the honest feedback, and but also that, they went from very flat characters to very, certain characters, and just like you were able to build them this world and really bring it to life in the way that you wanted over time. And during, whether it was in the very beginning with the first draft or over the process throughout the years of writing it, what type of research did you do when writing this book?
That's a good question. So I had the good fortune to have access to like a lot of experts in the time period, among my friends, and I also had access to the university library. So this is the part where I'm like, libraries are great. Everyone should be using their library more. So again, I majored in English in college and have a master's and PhD in English literature. So I was lucky enough to like have a lot of knowledge, like just like a good, I think, foundation work and like what was happening. Like I didn't need to Google like who was Christopher Marlowe or like things like that. Or like what was so special about Queen Elizabeth I. So I kind of knew that. But then like research about small things like, were there doorknobs during the time period? Like, were there glass windows? Like, what were clothes made out of? Like, I didn't know anything about that. So it was a lot of like going into the minutiae, either asking my friends who were studying this period more closely, like, hey, do you have these answers? Or yeah, kind of like going to the library and seeing like what was there. I think the biggest asset to my research was the Oxford English Dictionary, which is actually based like on Shakespeare's play, like the very first edition. The very first edition, they like went through Shakespeare's plays and were like, okay, so here's when these words first started to appear. And it's the dictionary has been like updated ever since. It's almost like more of a database than a dictionary. So I could like look up the etymology of words to be like, did this word exist? And even at the sentence level, I really tried to keep like any metaphors or kind of mentions of things like something that felt like period specific that like Will and James would have known and understood.
Wow, and that's so fascinating, and I didn't even know that with the Oxford Dictionary, and that that you could use it in that way and look that far back, basically in time, with seeing if it was around back then. Because also, even like I wouldn't think it in general if I was just trying to write a historical fiction, but like those details are so important. If of course, it's you want it to be accurate as possible, and yeah, so even just like the little things that you were mentioning, like doorknobs and clothing and windows, and so you clearly put a lot of work into researching and learning and, just being able to craft also the right details for your story. And during this time, what was most important for you about writing this book, knowing you were writing about real time periods and real places and people and using older language for certain things? And just throughout this book, was there one thing that was most important?
Yeah, I'd say for me, the thing most important was getting the queerness right in the time period, like kind of like both contextualizing that, and I knew that I did not want to write an unhappy queer love story. Like I do call this a romance, and people are like, you kill a lot of people, Erin. I'm like, yes, but it does, like, it has that like happy like romance read ending that like we want it to have. And a lot about queerness at the time period, it's kind of true like what the boys go through. Like queerness wasn't legal, but it was largely like ignored. The bigger issue for the boys in kind of thinking about queerness was actually class at the time period, like presenting yourself or acting like you were someone of the upper classes if you weren't, was a greater offense in some ways and a more visible offense than who you loved, who you spent your time with. So I kind of braiding, like realizing that, and then realizing like, okay, I'm gonna like braid together like classism and queerness and like kind of see how this looks. That was the thing that was always called like kind of at the forefront of my mind, and the thing that I wanted the most to get right. Because I think a lot of us, and it's true, like things have progressed so much for our communities, as queer people. And things are like definitely worse in the past, but it's also like more complicated. And I think like some of those complications of like, oh, like this was like outlawed by church and state both, but you really wouldn't get in trouble unless someone like had a grudge against you and wanted to report something. I was like, huh, this is like really interesting. And kind of getting that right was the thing I most wanted, to make sure that I put in the book.
I love that. Well, thank you for sharing that. And did you have any other title options before deciding on by any other name?
Okay, I am terrible at titling books. By Any Other Name has the dubious honor maybe of being the only book, where I picked the title and people were like, okay, that'll work. It was called Be All and End All, which was bad. I didn't like that. And By Any Other Name, even that title, my editor was like, are there other titles out there, do you think? And I was like, no, I don't think so. I think that's the one. So yes, there were other titles, but they were very bad titles.
Well, I do love the title that was chosen, and yeah, it's always fun to hear, you know, the process to it. And along with that title process, what was the cover process like? Because it's really such a fabulous cover and so stunning.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I love this cover. I feel like some people don't love the new kind of trend in YA covers of like having like detailed faces and characters on the cover. But as an author, like this was the first time I like saw my characters like visually brought to life, and it was like really moving, and I love the direction they took with it. I had almost no involvement with the cover process, which I think made me happier. I had like kind of so much going on. It like appeared in my inbox one day, like a gift from the Tooth Fairy or like Santa Claus or something. And my editor was like, I didn't know it was coming. And my editor kind of framed it like, we have this cover and we love it. Everyone loves it so much. We hope you love it too. So there was also kind of this sense of like, okay, like this is gonna be the cover. So when I opened the PDF, I guess it was a JPEG file, doesn't matter. Like when I opened it, I kind of had this like, oh, like this tense moment of like, oh my God, I hope I like it too, because I don't think they're gonna change it. And like, what if my first book is a terrible cover and it just has to be there forever and I have to pretend to like it in interviews and podcasts? But I loved it. So I was glad I was sitting down because I've just always loved everything about it. I don't think a single thing has changed. Yeah, I hope that we keep doing like character forward covers in YA because I think that they are so fun.
Yeah, I love the details and even just the back of it too, with like how it continues with the pillars and the curtains and the set. And it's just so just I love the details, just and it immerses you into the story even before you've read it. And it just matches the inside of the book so well. So yeah, it's just really, really fabulous. And also when you think about like the it sort of just also yeah matches the time period that it takes place too. It's just that feeling. So yeah, it I love it as well. And yeah, it must have been exciting to sort of see it and then have this like relief of like, oh, it's really nice.
It definitely was. The artist is Mona Fiden, if anyone wants to go check out
Yeah.
her Instagram.
Well, how does it feel now that your book is out in the world and it's been out for over, just over a week now, right?
It's over a week. It feels like good but also very surreal, I think. A lot of people like kind of talk about like the post debut slump. I don't feel the slump. I feel like really at peace now that it's finally out there. I felt like the kind of the lead up to the launch was very stressful. Like I wasn't sure how to, I'm not very good at like self promo or like talking about myself or accomplishments or things like that. So it was very like, oh, what do you do, Aaron? It's like, oh, I write. And I was like, what do you write? It's like, books. And like, you have a book out? And be like, no, but I will. And then like just kind of like that always, I don't know. It's definitely a me problem. I don't recommend this mindset for other people. Like, don't do this. So I feel like really great that it's like out there, people can find it. People have like sent me messages of like, hey, I found it on my shelf. I found it in my like bookstore's shelf, I guess, rather. So it feels just like really nice to have that out there, and like also kind of surreal that like this thing that like lived on my computer is like Shakespeare book for 5 years is now like a physical thing that like I can pick up.
Yeah, it's well, I mean, even just after of the beginning of the release, I mean, you were able to go to New York Comic Con, which is
Yeah.
so cool, and you had your book event at Book People, and it was, I'm sure it's just exciting and, like you said, surreal. And yeah, it is. I can't wait to find it out. I There's like no bookstores near me, so like I have to like travel to go see some,
I haven't seen it on the
sadly.
shelves either,
Oh
so
really? Okay.
no, not yet.
Well, my fingers are crossed that you do soon, and I'm hoping to as well. But I'm sure it's just very exciting. And now that it's out and people, like you had said, people have sent you messages, and what do you hope your readers will take away from reading the book?
Yeah, that's a great question. I hope that readers take away from this book that I guess there's a few things. One, I hope they take away that history is fun and cool. Doesn't have to be all fantasy all the time. No disrespect to my fellow fantasy writers and lovers. I also like to read fantasy. So one, that history is fun. I'd say two, not that just like queer people were always there. I think happily in historical, we're a little bit like moving beyond that, which is really exciting. Like that queer people were there and always part of history, and their stories are like always like we can find them even if they're not like maybe part of our like mainstream narrative of history that we're taught in like high school and stuff. But also that queer people can get up to like historical hijinks and be part of like murder mysteries and plots and like make mistakes and like trust the wrong people. My boys, well, okay, Will's a mess. I'll leave James off the hook. But I kind of loved like writing that in this book. So I'd say, yeah, like those are kind of the two things I hope people get from it. And I hope they don't guess who the murderer is. I hope that surprises them.
Yes, you did a wonderful job. I will say I love trying to figure it out, but you got me,
Excellent.
and yeah, and it's that's such a wonderful takeaway. And yeah, I can't wait for other people to read this story and just love it. And yeah, and just also see why, like you said, historical fiction can be so much fun. Because I didn't really discover it until last summer, and now since then I've like turned towards historical fiction. That sounds interesting to me, but also this like realization of like, yeah, you can have historical fiction where there's romance or there's queer characters or there's mystery. It doesn't just have to be like so and so fought this war and now, the president of the United States, all that stuff. So
Yeah, like I feel like historical books, and part of this I think is still a little bit true, but they were so serious. Like
yeah.
so many sad books about World War II, a great time period. But like real bummers, which is maybe rich coming from me because there are a lot of murders in this book. But yeah, what book like turned you on the path of historical fiction last summer? I'm so curious.
Yeah. Well, she was actually a guest on the podcast, and it's A Letter in the Wall by Eileen Brill.
Okay.
And it's like the 1900s, from like 1915 to like 1970, something in that time frame throughout. You're following this woman's life, and it also is like a thriller suspense. And it was at a time where just women in businesses were pushed down and were given less power, and just showing her trying to sort of forge forward and get the power that she deserved and the credit that she deserved. And so it was really intriguing. And then I just continued looking for books. I think my favorite one after that would have been Last Night at the Telegraph Club by Melinda Lowe. And that one was so good, and that was a queer romance. And yeah, so I just have it's opened a new door, and I'm very grateful for it because, yeah, there can be exciting historical fiction.
Awesome. Great books.
During this publishing process, have you learned anything, or has your perspective shifted about anything in the writing or publishing world?
I'd say that one thing that kind of shifted my perspective was just seeing like what like a well-oiled machine like publishing is behind the curtain. Like the timeline for this book was like so structured out, and like there were so many different steps and so many like really helpful, generous people like copy editors, cover artists, like publicists, kind of like nudging me down, like kind of shepherding me through that. As someone who like works on a lot of projects and like long timelines too, I was like very like, whoa, like this is a ton of planning. Everyone is handling this so well. I'd say for me, I hear a lot like of authors who maybe feel like their publishers like don't support them or like don't give them like the marketing that they want and stuff. So I kind of like expected to go into this like having to do like a lot of self-advocacy, and kind of following up for like creating my own opportunities, but that has not been my case with SNS. So I feel like really, really lucky that I landed like with that publisher, like with my editor, and kind of like with that team with her. Yeah, so I think that publishing a book is always going to be inherently stressful, but it felt like really like I could kind of trust fall into that process because for the first time, like it wasn't just me like doing it alone. Like when I was writing books that didn't sell and things like that.
Right. That's so wonderful that you've felt that support and have had that. And I will say, I first heard about By Any Other Name from Y'all West, I think, which for anyone who's listening is the West Coast Y'all Fest, this like siblings. And it was advertised by Simon and Schuster at their booth, and I was like, wow, that cover, oh my gosh. And so then I went to look it up and learn more about it. And then not long after, there was a TikTok that they had posted, like unboxing recent arcs, and they were like doing three-word pitches, and they were like gay Shakespeare's assassins. And I was like, sign me up. So it's been wonderful just to see that as a viewer of that marketing, and then to hear that you really did feel that support is so wonderful.
Thank you. I feel, yeah, like I said, just really lucky and grateful that that was the team I was with. I know that's not everyone's experience with publishing, so I'm definitely not taking it for granted.
Yeah. If you could turn your book into anything other than a movie or a TV show, what would that be?
Oh man, I feel like this is too obvious when I say that. I know you already know what I'm gonna say. I would turn it into a play. Because you sent me your questions before this, and I love this question. I would turn it into a stage play, kind of like in like that theater in the round, like kind of the Globe style theater. And specifically, oh, I forgot to look up this playwright before this, but there's a play called The Spanish Tragedy. And I'll send you the writer after this, but it's called The Spanish Tragedy. And basically, like, the lover like dies in act one, and I saw the play once staged where like he just kind of like stalks around the stage like a ghost, like glaring at everyone and doesn't say anything for the rest of the play. Like, it's just like this angry ghost always on stage, like haunting every conversation. And I'm like, I think Christopher Marlowe would love to be my angry ghost, like haunting the play version of By Any Other Name. So yeah, I would do it a play kind of specifically having the angry ghost haunt the play, like the Spanish Tragedy.
I love that. Oh my gosh. Well, of course, I sort of had a hunch that that would be the answer, but I love that you had a playwright in mind and that you had even little aspects to add to it. And oh my gosh, I would so love to see that as a play. And if anyone's listening who is a playwright, like this would
Get
be
on it.
so wonderful. Exactly. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well,
The playwright's Thomas Kidd, by the way. I just looked
oh,
it up.
perfect.
Thomas
Okay.
Kidd, Spanish Tragedy. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, oh my gosh, that's such an exciting answer. And well, hey, I will be manifesting that. So,
It together.
right, exactly. Since theater and Shakespeare obviously play a big role in this novel, do you have a favorite Shakespeare play?
Yes, I love Shakespeare plays, which I didn't think, again, I did not read as a child, so the fact that I like Shakespeare enough to have a favorite play now as an adult feels very like, whoa, are you sure that's the same kid? I'm a huge fan of Midsummer Night's Dream. I love the hijinks. We have like the fairies, we have like the rude mechanicals, and like these four lovers who like are honestly making like bad decisions. Like, I'm kind of like, don't be with him, like he sucks, like why, like don't put his spell so he loves you, like just leave him behind, let the fairies have him. So that's probably my favorite one. And Brittany Morris, if you love Shakespeare books, Brittany Morris came out with a book earlier this year called That Selfsame Metal that kind of explores like Orisha and Fae like in Shakespeare's world, and it kind of like it feels a little bit Midsummer Night's Dream like. So love that play, love this book homage to it. Midsummer Night's Dream all the way for me.
I love that. That is such a fun play. And yeah, just full of magic and hijinks and hilarity and so much fun. What would be your advice for any aspiring writers?
To folks who are aspiring writers, I'd say don't forget to love what you're writing. I feel like especially when you start writing seriously, it's like really easy to like let the noise in from like TikTok or Instagram or just like the internet in general about like what you should and shouldn't be doing as a writer, or kind of like what's selling and like what you should be writing if like you want to get editor or agent interest. But I think when we start to write for people who aren't ourselves, like when we as writers stop being our number one audience, you can kind of tell in the writing. And it doesn't become like as fun anymore. Like obviously like not everything is fun all of the time. So like there are days writing is a slog and I'm like, oh, I hate this and I don't want to do it. But I think like remembering that if I'm like loving what I'm trying to put in the page and bring to life, like then the writing gets done, like I feel inspired, the book is better. So yeah, I guess that sounds like a little like hokey, but it's easy
No.
to like let other people's thoughts and feelings kind of like overwhelm like what you want and what you love when you're writing.
Yeah, that is really wonderful advice and so true. And Yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Thanks for asking.
Of course. Well, on that sort of advice train, what advice would you give a younger version of yourself?
Yeah, I'd say for my younger self, the advice I'd give is to like not be so afraid and to just kind of go for it. There's that like trend on Instagram. I'm gonna like date this to the day, but there is like a trend on Instagram right now that's like authors kind of posting like all of their manuscripts and like the year that they wrote them and the name of them. And I did that and I was like, whoo, I've been writing for a long time. And kind of seeing those gaps of like when I stopped writing and when I started again, I could kind of pinpoint like where I doubted myself each time and like when I kind of stopped writing seriously. So I wish I could go back and be like, just go for it. It's gonna work out. Like don't let the noise in. I was definitely I should take my own advice and like not let the noise in of other people too. So yeah, kind of banishing some of that fear and not being afraid to like go for something.
I love that. That is wonderful. Well, I don't know if you can say much or anything at all, but if you can, what's next for you?
Oh man. I am hoping that baguettes could be counted as a research expense. We'll let it stay there. I think that's all I can say right now.
Okay. Well, I am intrigued. And yeah, ooh, well, that's a very good hint of just yeah, oh my gosh. Well, now that your debut novel is out in the world and it's been published for over a week, and maybe this would be the same even before you published, but to you, what does literary success look like?
Yeah, I'd say for me, literary success looks like being able to continue to write books, and hopefully they get published, whether it's like traditional publishing or not. I've always been someone who like has this compulsive need to like create a story out of like things around me to come up with like reasons for things or kind of wonder what if. So I'd love to be able to continue to do that forever and like whatever like kind of space or platform that looked like.
What a fabulous answer. And gosh, I love that so much. Well, with that, we have found the end of episode 47. And Erin, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be on this episode of Char Reading and sharing your stories. It was so beyond wonderful chatting with you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Gabriel. Thank you for having me here. I loved all of your questions. I'm going to be manifesting a play version of By Any Other Name with the angel
Absolutely.
Christopher Marlowe. Yeah, for the
Yeah,
rest of the year.
for sure. Oh, well, I'm so glad and I'm so honored that you just had interest in being on the podcast, and it means so much to talk with you. And where can the listeners find you?
They can find me mostly on Instagram. That's at Erin C. Otter. C. Otter is like the animal. And I also have a website, Erin Cotter Writes. And if you want to like get in touch, but off of Instagram, like there's a form there that you can message me on. And those are the two places you'll find me.
Wonderful. Well, aside from the very recent release of By Any Other Name, do you have anything upcoming or current that you want to shout out or promote?
Man, there's so many books all the time. There's so many good books. Let's see. I'm really excited to read Jason June's The Spells We Cast.
Oh, it's fun.
Oh, you've
I will
read it
say it's so
already.
fun.
You're
Yeah.
jealous. So I'm really excited to read that. But I have not yet read Pride and Prejudice in Pittsburgh, the time traveling sapphic fantasy I've wanted for a very long time. So I think I'll like leave it there for now. But those are two books that I am very excited to get into.
Yeah, well, I hope you enjoy them, and those are both such wonderful reads, and I love that. Well, thank you everyone for listening to today's episode of Char Reading. Don't forget to subscribe or follow the podcast, and if you'd like, you can write a review or rate the show. It helps other book lovers find these amazing guests and their amazing stories. As always, you can follow Char Reading on Instagram at Char Reading Podcast and on Threads at that same handle, and now on TikTok at Gabriel Reads. You can find this show wherever you get your podcasts, and you can catch new episodes every other Friday. You can buy books by the Char Reading authors through the bookshop.org link in the Char Reading link tree below. And yes, of course, that includes Erin's marvelous book. Go read it. Erin, I want to thank you again for being here today and telling some fantastic stories. It was so beyond amazing to learn more about you and your debut. You are just too iconic. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.